Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about it at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Melissa Pacioli. She's executive director of the Kenzie Academy from Southern New Hampshire University. It's an online coding and tech school that offers certificate programs in software engineering, UX design, and cybersecurity, among others. Why be in school for years when you can certainly when you can do it in months? That sounds good to me. So I'm really interested in learning more about how someone with degrees in math and civil engineering ended up heading up an online coding school. So welcome to Teach the Geek Interviews, Melissa.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Wonderful. So as I mentioned, you got a degree in math. So what was the motivation to get that degree?
Yeah, when I was a non-traditional student, so I'm a first generation non-traditional student. I had originally started out as community justice, criminal justice, thinking about legal, becoming an attorney, went to a community college, stepped out of that, thought, nope, I need to really do some lived experience and figure out where I want to be. And then returned to school later in life and landed on economics as well as math for my undergraduate degree. So I really liked economics and thought that I liked both the theory and the kind of the macro and the micro levels of it. And that's something that's followed me throughout my career through engineering and systems thinking, thinking holistically, and then also on a detailed level. So it's really something that I started on, dug into the math around economics, and then continued to explore throughout my career in engineering.
You know, I commend you for going back to school as a non-traditional student. It was difficult enough for me to do it right after high school. I can't imagine going back in, you know, in my 20s to go in, especially if you're in classes with people who are like 18, 19 years old. You're just looking at them like, man, what am I doing here? But yeah, you got it done. But I also saw that you got a master's in civil engineering. So what was the motivation to get that degree?
Yeah. So as I started to work, my first job out of the economics and math degree was to work for a software development company that did economic and demographic forecasting models. And so to work on the software development of that product. And so as I was doing that work, I was looking, coming from the private sector, thinking about the public sector for work because I was a single parent at the time. When I did return to school, I was actually expecting my first child and had to, that was earlier on in my undergraduate, had to turn the desk sideways to fit in to take my classes. So as I continued in my career, working in software development and economics and modeling and that type of work, I started to think about benefits being really important to me and started to look for different roles that I could cross over my tech skills into, and landed in the public sector on transportation engineering and in that world. And so that really led me to my degree in civil engineering at the university focused on transportation.
Wow.
So I crossed over my technical skills from one in modeling and used, again, that perspective of a wide view and then a detailed view. So very much used in transportation modeling.
Okay. Then you didn't stop there. So from what I saw, I see you're pursuing a degree or a PhD. So why pursue the PhD now?
Yeah. So great question. I have always wanted to be have a PhD and be an instructor. But then again, as my career has continued to evolve, I have found different things that I've loved about the process and different areas that I wanted to explore. So my PhD will be in civil engineering. I'm a candidate right now. I've passed my qualifying exams. I've defined my research and I'm actively working on my research. I actually went to Greece in June of last year to talk at an international level about some of my research, which is focused on teens that have ADHD in a driving environment. And we study them in our Arbella Human Performance Lab at UMass. So I've done a lot of work in that area and worked part-time on my PhD. So have been doing that for some time while also working full-time for benefits and for my family.
You know, I didn't even know it was possible to do a PhD part-time. How do you balance you pursuing a PhD and working full-time?
Yeah, that's tough. Now, there's no doubt about that. That is tough. I've given up a lot of nights and weekends, a lot of different sacrifices to get there and to make. It's an important part of what I want to give back, I would say. So as I defined what I wanted out of a PhD, it was more than just getting a degree. I wanted something that would give back to the world and not sit on a shelf. So I didn't want something theoretical. And in my family, my daughter and my son, we have ADHD. And so I started to really think closely about how I could dive into my research topic, explore my research topic, and develop my research around something that could give back to a larger audience and really help to impact others that were struggling in that area around driving and learning to drive. Once I realized that this was a much bigger issue than just in our family, where our new driver had a few car accidents right off the bat, I started to think about the larger impacts and the potential of that research. And so that really keeps me going, I would say. And so you have to balance both your responsibilities within your role, your professional role, but also your research role. And I would say that my motivation towards my research and towards helping others in that space keeps me going on the nights and weekends. And so I also have a tremendously supportive committee, and that's important. Without that, you cannot extend your PhD requirements. You're given this timeline, if you will, of you need to complete in X amount of time. And I've really had the great fortune of working with amazing individuals that recognize I'm a working professional, and I have this drive to really explore this research and this research topic. And they helped me to get that done and support me as a student and as a professional. So I feel really honored to have such a great committee to do that work. But I don't think that's the norm for some people. not that they don't have a good committee, but that they don't have the extended amount of time to get that work done. It's more accelerated. For everyone. I would say maybe not try it at home. I don't know.
As I said, I didn't even know that it was even possible. So when you're finished your PhD, do you have any idea of what you want to do with it? Are you thinking of becoming a tenure track professor? Do you want to stay a professional?
Yeah. So that's really interesting. So throughout my PhD process, and because it has taken me a bit of time, I've been able to explore some of my other professional goals. And so I've had the opportunity to do some teaching along the way. I've had also an opportunity to think about commercializing my research and really taking my research to the next level and then getting it out into the world where it can then be used in a greater audience and by more people. And so through my entrepreneurial work and my entrepreneurial training, I am pretty drawn to tech ed, and to running businesses as well. So that's what really drove me to join Kenzie Academy. It is a great combination of both higher education, tech credentialing, really creative educational methods and instruction, a really truly mission aligned staff. and driven to help to impact students at scale, right? So I hope to commercialize my research, but also I'm really, really enjoying my work here at Kinsey Academy in helping others to fulfill their dreams as well in tech ed.
Okay. So you did mention that you're the executive director of Kinsey Academy. What mm-hmm. does being the executive director entail? What do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, great question. There are a lot of meetings. So I attend a lot of meetings. I listen to a lot of folks. And I think one of the main priorities for any leader, and certainly for me, is to really listen, to learn, to be open to hearing perspectives. So while you're in those meetings, you're listening, learning, and you're here to support the company. I'm here to support the company and its mission, both strategically over the next few years, but also holistically as we think about scaling our product and scaling our tech ed certifications. So my day starts really early, probably around, well, I guess 6 a.m. on Eastern time, 5:30. And I do a lot of reviewing, reading articles, that type of thing, see what's out there on the news, see what's happening in the tech industry, see what's going on, and then structure my day, set myself up for the meetings that I have at hand, handle any type of crisis that might be coming up or anything that might need an immediate attention. And then start to work with my team. I have an excellent, amazing team here, amazing staff at Kinsey Academy, super talented, and really just help to move us along, right? So that looks like new product development or looking at our curriculum from a different lens, taking a look at our data to see how our students are performing, to visit our students, to talk with them, and to hear a little bit about their experience, to talk with our teaching SMEs. So really just, yeah, a lot of listening and learning, and also helping to guide and facilitate an amazing team of professionals towards our goal, which is to impact student lives.
I have a friend here in San Diego where I live, and he runs a coding boot camp, and he mm-hmm. started it because he really wanted to make sure that people who didn't necessarily have the resources to go for a four-year degree still had the tools to go get jobs within the tech community. But there, mm-hmm. there seems to still be some dinosaur type of organizations that insist on their on these tech people, you know, the engineers, the developers, having a four-year, you know, computer science, software engineering, computer science mm-hmm. engineering degree, and don't really kind of shy away from the boot camps. What do you? I guess based on your work, how have you found the openness of companies being to people with certificates as opposed to degrees?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that Kinsey Academy is boot camp style, so I will say that we're not necessarily a boot camp. So some of the differences there are that we take a little bit of a longer approach. We have a little bit of a different approach in terms of the type of embedded higher impact or impact engine type of high impact practices in the teaching world. So some of those things that help for the student success. We also look at the student holistically and help support them throughout their journey. So really pairing them with a learning success advisor, matching them with career curriculum and a career advisor. We also work with industry partners to help on that end to craft and co-develop curriculum to help support that pipeline of tech that's needed. So in that industry, I think you can see we have such a need for tech employees. And so our framework and our ability is to be agile and responsive to any needs that come up. Right now, we're putting together a new certificate that is Python-based with blockchain, with an emphasis on blockchain. And so that's in response to that industry. And I think the industry is coming around a bit. So yesterday, I was on a panel discussion through Handshake, which we have built a partnership with. And the companies that are reaching out, they're realizing that, you know, thinking through the supply and demand question of the need for tech professionals really gets you to question whether or not you might need a four-year degree. So, or you can learn the skills that are necessary to jump into the job. And then what I love about the Kenzie model is that we also offer credits. So while you're earning your certificate, you're also earning college credits. So we're disrupting the educational model a bit. So you're earning both, right? So if you choose to go along in the degree path, an associate's, a bachelor's, you can take those credits with you. Not only have you earned a credential, a certificate that gets you the ability to be to jump right into day one of working in the tech field, but then you can also further your education if that's what you choose to do. So I think that at holistically in the industry perspective, there is a shift of mindset in that people are thinking more about what I would call competency-based learning. So skill level learning, right? So what are you learning? How, what are the learning outcomes of this? And so that's the model in which we use competency-based. You're learning a skill. This is our learning outcomes. And this is what you, you know, your outcome is. And I think that as industries are realizing the shortage of tech professionals, there is a need for that flexibility of thinking. And so I'm hoping that more and more companies certainly are leaning in that direction. If it's any evidence to the response that we received yesterday in the Handshake panel, there were a number of companies that were on that call really thinking through what does it mean to explore this huge talent pool that are coming from boot camps. There are boot camp style, as Kenzie Academy is. There's also an opportunity for upskilling, right? So, or reskilling, right? So there are opportunities where you may want to learn a different language, or you might want to be in a different pathway, a different tech skill. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity for that too.
You know, one of the concerns that I have currently is so many of these tech companies are laying people off. There's going to be a whole lot of people that were laid off from these companies now in the job market, competing with the people coming from boot camp style programs like your own. What can a program like Kenzie Academy do to make their graduates the most, I guess, attractive that they could possibly be, given that there's going to be this whole glut of people looking for jobs now?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. So one thing I would say is that our program really emphasizes real world problems and also building out your tech portfolio, your e-portfolio, your resume, your LinkedIn, your self-branding, if you will. So branding yourself in this field, and then also using project-based material and curriculum to give you that hands-on needed skill development that sets you aside. When you're competing in that early career level, you want to have those types of projects in your portfolio that you can then show your employer or future employer, this is what I've done. This is what I've worked on. The other thing that I think sets us aside is that we really have an interdisciplinary approach. And a lot of the employers that we hear from are speaking really highly about our students in terms of them being able to work well in teams. And that's built into our curriculum, right? And I think that there is an opportunity here. I don't like to say soft skills. I like to say human skills, right? So there are opportunities here where we can work together to also look holistically at the student, support the student, and teach skills that come to the table on the first day, but also make you really desirable. And lastly, I would say that our students are often coming from an area that they might have already been in the working field, and maybe in a different area, and so that brings value as well. Your experience in other industries teaches you how to be a professional, teaches you how to do other aspects of that learning curve. So while you might be an early career learner in the tech field, you might also have some other valuable transferable skills from your work experience. And so that often needs to be taken into account as well.
Yeah. Speaking of soft skills, Melissa, I started this podcast and YouTube channel based on my abhorrent soft skills. I had to give presentations in front of management when I worked as an engineer, and I wasn't very good at it, but I got a lot better at it because I saw the benefit of doing so. Is speaking in front of others something you've always been good at? And if not, what'd you do to get better at it?
Yeah, great question. So I also have anxiety about speaking in front of others. I think it's not uncommon in the STEM fields to have people that really are focused on technical, and then sometimes it might be also difficult to translate that technical language into language that's easy to understand. So one of the things that I try to do is I try to draw a story or an analogy with an explanation. So when I'm giving an example, in a way that they would understand, that we see this as a growing need in a logistics field. Logistics that you might have experienced during COVID when you had a shortage on the food shelves at the supermarket, right? So something that can directly relate the audience to what you're talking about from a technical lens. When I've talked about drones in Boston and drone usage and all of that, that world that's out there that seems really too technical for some people to ask questions about, I might say that this was a really cool opportunity for me to see a drone that could look across the Boston Harbor and tell me the time on the clock, right? So things like that, that just help to relate the audience to the technology or to whatever you're talking about. But holistically, I think it's something that you continue to practice, you continue to do. I still have my anxiety about it for sure. I reached out to our communications team at Southern New Hampshire here. They have a really lovely guide of 5 steps, right? Simplify your message, stick to 2 to 3 points. And they're excellent at hearing your delivery and working with you. So having strong partners on that communication side, I'm thinking back to some of my earlier presentations as I was along my career, where I would have a friend or, you know, your partner, and you would be delivering that message to them and then asking for feedback and being open to the feedback, right? And the more time you practice that, the more times that you're comfortable with it, helps you to get comfortable with the language and the delivery. But there's always area for improvement. So yesterday in my call, I asked staff, I asked my team, I said, where can I improve? What did I do that I could do better, right? So I don't want to know necessarily all the things. I do definitely want to know the things that I did well. Who doesn't, right? You're like, all right, where did I do well and where can I improve? But you want to build on the things that you are doing well, and then you want to work on the things that you need improvement on, but you want to continue to put yourself in that space and continue to work on it. And just know that everyone is anxious about it. And I really commend this platform and the work that you're doing. I think this is an excellent tool to really break down those types of situations to digestible and understandable, insightful points that can be used, right, to help someone to deliver in public speaking.
Well, yeah, I mean, I, you know, you give me a bit too much credit, Melissa, because I, to be very honest, I got better at giving presentations because the project that I was brought into, the company that I was working at to do, was canceled. And that was, that was maybe like 13, 14 years ago now. And mm-hmm. I still look back on that and think, maybe if I was just a little better at putting this information in a way that these senior management types could understand, maybe I could have mm-hmm. saved the project. But instead, I was just a sweaty mess in front of these people, just reading slides and trying to get out of there as quickly as possible. But oftentimes that never would happen because they'd have a whole bunch of questions that I thought I had answered during the presentation, but obviously not, because now I'm getting these questions. But, you know, it certainly was a work in progress, and it continues to be a work in progress. Practice makes mm-hmm. progress. You never, there's no real end destination. You know, when it comes yeah. to giving presentations, do you ever get nervous? And if so, how do you deal with your
always.
Nerves?
Always. So I'm nervous right now. And you actually raised a really good point in that comment, in that when you delivered that presentation to the audience, you thought you had answered those questions. So one thing I would say in terms of advice is to give that presentation to several different people. And then sometimes the questions that you think you've answered might not have been answered, but you'll find that out the more that you deliver the message to different people and different different audiences, right? So when you have a big message, it's good to get multiple input on that. So that's helpful as well. And I've seen that work for a lot of people, right? So as you move up in leadership, it's often time when you run messages through groups, large groups, input, you want to be open to input. I think it would not be fair to say that, I mean, many people are nervous public speaking, but you continue to do it. You continue to put yourself out there. You continue to practice that both in real time and then also with your fellow colleagues and looking towards input. So the other thing is really being open to input. Some of the other strategies that I've used when I'm nervous talking in front of people has been to look towards someone that I know in the audience, right? So if it's a couple of hundred people and you're delivering a presentation that's really large, you know someone in the audience, you can hold their eye, you can feel comforted by that. You can feel a little bit of okay, whew, I know somebody out there, right? Another thing that's happened to me frequently in that type of an environment is you might forget what you're saying. So you are running along and then you have practiced this and all of a sudden you've missed a step or you haven't thought through, you know, your thoughts just disappear. And so one thing I really recommend is telling the audience that, right? So being real and authentic instead of trying to cover it up helps to bridge that gap, right? So one of the things that I've done is said, I'm sorry, I want to back up to what I had said earlier and just make sure to cover X, Y, and Z. And I think the audience really recognizes that as well. And they like to be led along in the story and in the delivery. Another tip I would say is that quite often when we're nervous, we're talking fast. I'm talking fast during this interview. So now I can slow it down. Think through that. And it makes the delivery a little bit slower, but it also gives you an opportunity to think about your next thought, to think about framing that next thought, to think about where you can take that next thought. So those are some of the things that I've used, but I don't know. I don't get it right all the time. If I'm not well hydrated, well rested, I've eaten and I have a drink next to me, my notes next to me with my pen, I could go off script. So it happens.
You know, when you mentioned forgetting what you were about to say, it made me remember instances in which that was the case for me. I wish I would have had the confidence to actually say that to the audience, but I think I'm trying to remember, in those instances I would just kind of act as if I didn't forget and just go on with something that I'd remembered, but to have the confidence to be able to say I actually don't remember what I was about to say right now. I don't know if I could do it. But kudos to you for being able to do it. I certainly will say that. You know, Melissa, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. So please do. I'm on LinkedIn, Melissa Pacciulli. Please do send me a message, LinkedIn. You can get in touch with me on Kenzie Academy's website. My email should be there. Any social media, I'm on Twitter. I think it's at Melissa Pacciulli. Yeah. And I'm welcome to, I would love to hear from others. I'd love to hear their story too, about how they worked on their public speaking and their kind of delivery of messages. I'm open to suggestions too. So any way that someone can send me the message on how to improve, you need to really be open to it and you just have to continue to practice. So thank you so much for having me on. And I hope this has been helpful to you and to your audience and to others. And I'm open to really hearing from them.
Excellent. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson, founder of Teach the Geek, and you can learn more about it at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms. Or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.